Community Connections, CKMS. Local sounds, thoughts, passions, and success. Celebrate local, your neighbor's got a story to tell. Community Connections, CKMS.
Happy Friday, Waterloo Region. It is the 14th of April, 2023, a wonderful warm day outside. Also going to be a wonderful warm day in the studio because we have Caleb Koo and Rosie Samra in the studio to do a live in-studio performance. Hit it, Caleb. That is great. Caleb Koo and Rosie Samra, welcome to CKMS Community Connections. And in your case, Rosie, welcome back to CKMS Community
Thank
Connections.
Thank you again for having me.
Good to have you. And Caleb, that was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, man.
Yeah, very welcome. So I want to call the two of you the dynamic range duo because That song certainly did everything from the quiet bits to the loud bits to the rhythmic bits to the soft noodly bits. It's very nice.
Try to throw a little bit of it all in there, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Get it all in there. It's a small guitar.
It is, yeah.
Lots of sound out of a small guitar. How'd you come by it?
Well, I think I was... Man, I have a lot of guitars, so the stories get kind of muddled sometimes. But I believe with this one, I was playing some gig up in Northern Ontario somewhere with some band. And I went to just the local Lime McQuaid after soundcheck, as you do. And I saw this thing for like $250. And I've tried a couple of these kind of smaller parlor-sized guitars. But this one in particular just had this extra resonance that spoke to me a little bit more than some of the other cheaper ones maybe I've played. And for $250, you can't go wrong, man.
Yeah. For a small guitar, that seems expensive to me.
Oh, well... In terms of how guitar prices are going these days, I don't mind $250 for a guitar.
I've heard people paying $4,000 for a guitar, you know, five digits even.
Well, I've definitely done my share of spending a lot of money on guitar.
Yeah. Okay, so Rosie asked me not to ask you this, but how many guitars do you have?
I said you should ask him that.
For security purposes, we'll keep it roundabouts, but we'll say 20 plus. Ish.
Holy
in that range.
Moly.
More than any one person needs is what I would say.
I'm sure they all
but
have.
But less than any one person wants.
I'm sure they all have their own characteristics.
They do, absolutely. And a lot of them, oftentimes, I don't search out guitars, they kind of find me. So
yeah.
I stumble upon deals and such. You know, when you hang out with a lot of musicians, you end up stumbling into a lot of different worlds of gear.
Yeah.
So I just end up having a lot of guitars come to me. Some are gifts from students. I have some amazing students who've given me guitars
really?
Over the years. Some, you know, from friends, and some are just really great deals I can't pass up on.
Yeah. You said your other guitar is broken.
Oh, yeah, so I've got a proper Martin. It's just over the winter, I didn't take care of it like I should, so the actions, the height of the strings off the fretboard are kind of up there, so it's a little tougher to play, so yeah. I picked up this one.
You just have to press down further, and I'll bet it does damage to the intonation, too.
Yes, yeah, it's not as great. I'll take care of it. I just didn't have the time today.
And you can do that yourself. You can do that yourself.
Generally, acoustics are a little tougher because there's a little bit more... kind of science going on with the wood and the way it's braced and everything. I'm much more adept at working on electrics because there's a lot more stuff you can kind of tweak yourself. Acoustics, sometimes you got to take it to a specialist to take care of.
Right.
But oftentimes I can get it pretty close.
Yeah, I get the idea that on electric, the size and shape and material of the body doesn't make a great deal of difference to the sound, whereas on an acoustic it's the all-important thing.
That is the ever-long debate among guitar players of how much actually goes into the tone of an electric guitar, right? The wood used on the neck, on the fretboard, on the body, all the different elements, you know, the shape, like you said, the mass, the wood, the pickups. And at least the conclusion that I've come to is generally it does make some difference. It does make an audible difference if you're really listening for it, but it's only if you're really listening for it.
Okay.
If you're really not paying attention, you can't A-B them, it doesn't.
And you've got to have an ear for it too, I guess.
Absolutely. It's one of those things that when I first started doing a lot of the session work and sideband work that I do currently, I just totally didn't have an ear for it. I was a terrible tone guy.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of those people. They're tone guys. They're people who can sit down and they make an amp just sound amazing. Or they make a guitar just sound incredible. And I was not one of those people. I picked up my favorite guitar, plugged it in, and said, let's play some music, man. And I suppose that's how it starts off for a lot of people, right? But over the years, I've developed a little bit more finesse and a little bit more of an ear for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, it sounds good. I saw you playing at Waterloo Square back last summer sometime. You had an electric there.
Yes, yeah, I'm primarily an electric player. Like I generally don't pick up the acoustic unless it's too late, or the client requests it. Right.
Yeah, you've got a client coming up. You've got a gig.
I do. Yeah. It's actually my first ever solo gig. I'd say under my own name. Primarily, I work as a sideman, which is accompanying other artists. So generally, I just get my phone rings, someone will call me up, and I'll show up and I'll play the gig, and that's kind of the extent of the job.
Yeah.
So it's really amazing and really incredible, and I'm incredibly thankful to the Jazz Society for booking me under my own name as the Caleb Koo Quartet.
Caleb Koo Quartet. So who's in the quartet? Tell me your lineup there.
So currently the instrumentation is guitar, bass, vocals, and drums. So I'm on guitar, obviously. Mm-hmm. We've got Rosie on vocals. Mm-hmm. And then we have Matt Brazies on drums, and we have Mitch Camacho on electric and upright bass.
Yeah. Have you played before? Together as a group, as a quartet?
We've done rehearsals for this band, but I kind of put together this band especially for this gig because I really didn't expect to get booked. The Jazz Society is interesting in that way, and they kind of cold call you.
Okay.
It's kind of, you know, they pick who they like and they ask them to play. So I got kind of cold called and I totally didn't expect it. So.
Okay. This is happening when?
This is happening next Friday. And I would love to give you all tickets, but they, unfortunately, they sold out.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
Rather rapidly. It's funny. They sold out at such a pace that a lot of people I knew who wanted to get in couldn't get in, actually. Ah. Which was extremely surprising because generally, you know, shows at the Jazz Room don't sell out that fast. So I was a little blindsided by that, but I'm, of course, thankful.
Yeah, that's always nice to know. And probably leads to future bookings if they can sell
that's out the,
room
that's
with
the
Caleb Koo Quartet. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I knew this place as the Jazz Room, but you were talking about the Jazz Society.
Yes. So the Jazz Room itself is the room, right? The room is contained within the Hoother Hotel, but the Jazz Society books all the shows on the Friday and Saturday and some special Sundays and such. And the Jazz Society is basically a board of nonprofit volunteers that come together and they book in all these, you know, local and international jazz acts to come play and fill these rooms. So any, yeah. Most shows on a Friday or Saturday in the normal season, anything outside of summer, is booked by the Jazz Society. So it's a special event kind of run by them in the Jazz Room.
And only for the Jazz Room. So if I go out to Waterloo Square again and there's a jazz quartet playing, Caleb Koo Quartet possibly, that's not done by the Jazz Society.
I believe they do some other stuff, like the Uptown Waterloo Jazz Festival. I believe they contribute to that. But generally, I think their main focus is the Jazz Room.
Okay. I have to put some links into the show notes for that.
There you go.
So that anybody's interested in booking some jazz music for their venue can contact the Jazz Society.
Absolutely.
And get that happening. Yeah. And maybe specifically ask for the Caleb Koo Quartet.
Wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, wouldn't hurt. So when you got the cold call,
yes.
How did they know your name in the first place?
So,
if you've been a sideman, you're not primarily known as a jazz performer.
My kind of whole history is a little interesting. I've kind of floated between a lot of different genres and a lot of different worlds. So I spent most of my my early years playing jazz, playing big band music especially in Toronto. Started off in high school, but then I kind of reached the highest point I could in the high school, and I was looking for other opportunities outside of that. So there was this radio station in Toronto called Jazz FM.
Oh, yeah.
And they have a house band of young musicians called the Jazz FM Youth Big Band. So basically, you go there, you audition, it's all these super crazy Toronto kids. Like, they're all the kids of the professors at Humber and University of Toronto. So they're like, they've got jazz flowing through their blood, man. And so I remember being in grade 10 and showing up to this audition, you know, thinking I was good from high school.
Yeah,
I was, you know, great in high school, you know, big ego. And then I show up and, you know, some guy, you know... like crazy bebop lines and stuff, and I'm sitting here going, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going on here, man? And I just got it by the grace of I got really lucky because guitar players generally don't like playing big band music, so I just so happened I was the one of two guitar players who auditioned, so I just happened to get into the band.
Because acoustic guitar isn't normally a jazz instrument.
Well, generally you are playing electric guitar in the band. However, it was it's a contemporary big band, but we play a lot of classic swing songs.
Okay.
So if you think back, the easiest reference point I always tell people is like you think to like a movie where they show like the 20s or something, or like Sing Sing Sing, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So when you're playing jazz big band rhythm, a lot of times it's on electric guitar. You kind of turn down the volume so you get a little kind of percussive thing going, and it's this style of music. It's called Freddie Green comping. You're doing this, and you got big horns playing, ba 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 ba. And the thing is, the horns get a great time because they're sitting up there blowing souls, they're having a great time. Us guitar players, we're sitting here going. So I'd play 3-hour gigs, and I'd play maybe the 10 chords at most, and I'm just chunking away. But the thing is, I loved it. I genuinely did love it because it combines so many elements that I love about guitar. It combines the harmonic thing. And the beauty is, instead of playing full jazz voicings, which we're getting really kind of heavy-duty technical stuff here.
Go for it.
But generally, there's a bunch of different settings you play jazz in, right? And so when you're playing in a jazz combo, when people think of, for example, Miles Davis, or just like a jazz band in a club or something, that kind of image, you think of four people, five people, maybe a saxophone player.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff, you want to be playing fuller voicings, like so you can kind of fill up the space. But when you play this kind of big band music, there's 18 people in the band. You got a vocalist, you got five saxophones, four trumpets, you got a massive amount of people.
And one guitar.
One guitar player, and a piano player too. So the whole idea is you don't want to step on people's toes. So instead of playing, this, I would play it like this. I'd go. Right, that kind of stuff. So you really... It is kind of a science in reducing, because you have to take out all the extra frills, because everyone else is already playing the frills. Your job is to kind of just thump away.
Yeah. It's more like percussion than it is, an instrument.
And I really enjoyed it because I didn't have the chops back then. I didn't have the chops to do all the soloing stuff, so I could kind of be good in my own little lane.
Right. Yeah. Was there ever an opportunity for a solo?
Absolutely. As a guitar player, everyone wants to hear a guitar solo.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, people will, I'll be playing in bands and sessions and stuff, and I don't want to play a solo and be like, hey, guitar man, play a solo. And I'm like, dude, I played a solo in the last song. It's just, people just love hearing a guitar solo.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't escape it.
And that's true for all genres of music, not just
every genre
jazz
of music.
Field, you know, the big hair bands have their guitar solos. Yeah. You do the big hair stuff?
I don't. That's the one thing. I was never like a big heavy metal or kind of shredder guy.
No?
No, it just never appealed to me. I'd love to one day. I'd love to be able to do all that crazy shredding stuff, but for me, music has always been, it's as bad as it may sound, but music has always been kind of a living for me. I got lucky that as soon as I started playing, I started making money from gigs and such. And
yeah.
Then I started teaching. So music has been kind of the main job that the only job that I've really had.
Teaching only guitar or teaching other instruments as well?
I teach primarily guitar and jazz theory. So kind of improvisational theory.
Okay. So somebody coming to you needs to have some musical background already.
Oh, not necessarily. Yeah. I've taught kids as young as 4 years old and to, like, I think 75 plus.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I inherited an upright bass from my father-in-law.
I played those for a time, too.
Yeah, yeah, and I know how to hold it, and that's the extent of my knowledge.
Those are a beast of an instrument. That's funny. Actually, I was primarily a bass player in my high school, because I was the only guy who could figure it out well enough to kind of play in a lot of bands, but I just did it wrong, so I tweaked my wrist a little bit, so I try not to play it too much these days, because I feel like I'm going to aggravate my wrist or something doing it. But I love that instrument, and I do hope one day to get back to it.
Yeah, need some wrist strengthening exercises.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Got something else for us?
Yeah, yeah. I want to see if you guys recognize this one. We're going to do this one at the jazz room. It's going to be a little funky. You'll probably get it right here, but it's a fun one.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Sorry, I was peeking you there a little bit.
Yes, yes. Thought you you broke a string there or something.
I got a pretty heavy right hand.
Yep. How did you choose the music for your gig? How did you choose your music for today?
In general, it's really funny because I've been a part of probably hundreds of setlist creations, you know, other artists kind of getting my input, but I've never actually put that many together of my own volition, so to say. And I think for me, it was guitar has played such an important role in my life, so I decided to pick songs that have spoken to me as both a musician, as a person, and as a guitar player. And kind of thought of it from those three different aspects.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, you could say being a guitar player is the same as being a musician, and hopefully they are.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would say that the guitar itself, and any instrument in general, has a unique enough culture. You can classify it as its own little thing.
Yeah. Right?
There's a unique experience shared among guitar players that isn't shared among all musicians. Right?
Is that just jazz guitar players or guitar players from all genres?
Well, I think probably from the jazz realm, at least for me personally, but guitar is such a vast and beautiful thing. That's what I tell my students. You can do anything you want on a guitar.
Yeah.
I think other than piano, it's probably the most versatile instrument in the world, right?
Yeah. Wouldn't consider something like the violin as you know, the master of all instruments?
Well, think about every single genre you could play. You know, you can fit a violin there, but it's not necessarily going to be the most natural instrument, right?
Yeah.
Guitar is natural in a lot of different settings. That's what it is.
You know, and you see Stefan Grappelli, for example, doing doing the jazz stuff. That's an unusual thing because you don't often see violins in the genre.
Well, it is, absolutely, yeah. And that whole gypsy jazz thing in the 30s and 40s was absolutely fascinating.
Sounds like you'd fit right in there.
Well, I remember that was the dream. I remember being in grade 9 in high school, and I always dreamed of like going to Paris and studying gypsy jazz.
Yeah.
Until I grew up and realized that doesn't exist anymore. That's not a thing.
Then you've got to bring it back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is that an influence for you?
Oh, absolutely. I have. Yeah, I think Django was one of the first people who really blew my mind. And to my understanding, there's only one video of him actually playing. And I remember seeing it, looking it up on YouTube, and different people had posted different sections of the video. So it's like a 5-minute long video, but someone had posted a minute here and 2 minutes there. So I remember searching through every single YouTube thing to try and piece it together and find the whole thing. And it blew my mind to see someone play guitar like that.
Yeah,
especially with he'd injured his fingers, so these two fingers were actually stuck together. These two fingers were stuck together, so he only played with his first and second finger.
Right.
So he's doing all these insane jazz lines with just two fingers. It blew my mind.
Yeah. Saw a video of Vangelis the other day doing some improvisational work, and he was just tiddling on the keyboard, holding a pen between his fingers. You know, it's just amazing how he could manage to do that. But I guess once you've really got to know the instrument, you just become one with the instrument.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter how you're slightly encumbered because it's part of you.
Yeah, well, I spent years, chasing, the thing, as many musicians do, right? Mm-hmm. Chasing the ability, the technical ability of the instrument. And it's funny because, people used to say, oh man, that was a sick, sick lick, sick riff, whatever, or, sick line. And I think that the compliment that I like the most, or the compliment that really hits me the hardest now is that you just look like you were playing music up there.
Yeah.
Or that there was a seamless connection between your brain and your mind, which is the thing that I think all musicians inherently, whether they know it or not, is what they were chasing. So regardless of what you think, I'm just trying to get this, one really cool solo down. I think what you're trying to do is you hear that solo in your head and you're trying to seamlessly make the transition between what you can hear and what you can play. And that really is the end goal, at least for me, in terms of all music, is I want to be able to hear something complex, which means training my ear, exposing myself to many types of music, many different styles and stuff like that, so I can hear it. And then once I can hear that, I want to be able to seamlessly transition that harmonically to my instrument, right?
So in order to learn something like that, and you've heard it, do you need to see it written out? Do you need to have some kind of aid memoir to get it to come out of the guitar the way you want?
Generally not. Sometimes it helps. So I play a lot of gigs with a lot of different artists. Right? Mm-hmm. I primarily, as I said before, I'm a sideman. So that basically entails just driving around everywhere, playing with everyone in every... Yeah, I play in country, alt-rock, folk, jazz, funk, country. Like it just...
Everything.
It keeps going, right? So sometimes I do have to use charts for a lot of that stuff because I've got, four gigs in a week.
Right, it's and all different types of music, all different songs.
All different types of music. Yeah. This one's 3 hours, this one's an hour and a half, so it's a lot of music I have to learn. So I do end up using charts for a lot of stuff.
Okay.
But generally, when I'm improvising, I like to not write it down because that, encumbers the process unless I'm trying to transcribe something that I did already.
Is it still work for you? Do you still have to, you know, pick up the guitar and say, oh, man, got to play guitar again? And
sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Yeah. It depends on what I'm doing, right? Like anything in life. Oftentimes, the playing itself is you know, not really a chore anymore. I love just picking up the guitar and just playing anything, literally anything. But when I have to sit down and maybe, like, make a worksheet for my students, it's a little more boring to sit at a computer and, like, type in the dot for the fret, and then I have to, like, sit here and just make sure it's all right and then do that and export the file, and then, oh, it's corrupted, and I have to do it all over again, right? So
that's not the music-making part. That's the music theory,
Exactly. It's kind of the stuff surrounding the instrument. It's, like, sending invoices and, you know, replying to emails now more so that bug me than, you know,
the business of doing business rather than the business of making music.
Exactly, yeah.
Did it click for you at one point when you were playing guitar and it stopped being work but it became part of you? Was that an instantaneous thing, or did it just slowly sneak up on you?
Yeah, it's a hard question to kind of answer. I think for me, it did slowly sneak up, because there isn't a single moment that I can pinpoint as being like my aha kind of. Yeah. That was when the switch flipped. I think I can name a few kind of key moments, as in like gigs that I played that I felt I kind of reached a higher level in that gig. Like, I remember going in to the gig or something. I was playing, I think a big one for me was when I was playing with the big band in Toronto, the Jazz FM band. And we were playing at a restaurant called The Pilot, which is kind of this a venue with jazz bands and stuff. And I had a big solo and a tune. And I remember every time in rehearsal I'd done okay. It wasn't amazing, wasn't terrible, right? But I remember I got up in that bandstand that night and just something happened. And I just did really good on that solo. And I remember all, you know, all the people around me who I had respect were like, yeah, that was sick, man. And the audience was going crazy. And then I got a video of it, too. That's the thing. I remember a lot of these moments aren't captured on video.
Right.
And then I'll be like, oh, that was amazing. Did anyone capture it? I'm like, nah, I'll never know what I actually played, right?
Yeah.
But that one was captured. And I remember that was the first, like, I think, really great solo that I felt I played. And listening back to it, it's not even that complex or anything. It just had all the right musicality elements, right? It's not about playing crazy fast licks. It's not about all that. It's about making music that people connect with, right?
Right, right. Speaking of making music, do you write your own?
I'm a terrible writer, man. I'll be 100% honest. And I've found being authentic is one thing that keeps on getting me hired, right? I'm just awful at writing. I'll have little ideas here and there that I'll record, but then I never get around to finishing them. And then it'll usually be I get ideas while I'm trying to practice someone else's music for a gig or for a session or something. And then I'll record it, and then I'll get sidetracked, and I'll go back to the actual work I have to do learning their music. And I just never get around to writing my own stuff.
One of the difficulties I had in preparing the show today was that there's no pre-recorded Caleb Kuh music.
It's true.
Out there.
Yeah. So. I'm a free agent. I'm a musical mercenary. Just roll around.
Planning anything? Are you planning on releasing any just you music or just Caleb Kuh Quartet music?
I've been on the fence about it for many, many years. And I think my plan, at least, is I want to give... I'm only 20 right now, so I've been doing this for a while, but that a while kind of slipped into my teens.
Yeah.
And so I've been thinking about it, but I want to give myself, you know, a number of years, because as, you know, being 20, I don't have that much experience in life. I've played probably a couple hundred gigs, but I've, you know, still haven't seen that much of the world. I've been around, but that doesn't mean that I know everything.
Right.
I don't think we ever will, but I think that I need to mature and grow a little bit more before I try and put something out there.
It isn't just technical skill, because you've got technical skill just oozing there. That's not where the problem lies.
No, I think it's maturity. I think I figure myself a relatively mature person, but if I figure that, I probably am not.
Okay, a little bit of self-doubt there.
Yeah, well, I prefer if I'm going to do something like that, I want to give myself a little bit more time to experience the world and mature.
Right, right. And then once you've achieved that level of enlightenment, then we can expect some recorded Caleb Kuh music.
I'll see you in 5 years.
All right. I'm going to hold you to that.
There you go.
Yeah. Hope to record some of the stuff that you're playing today, and, you know, we'll play it on the radio station.
That would be great,
so if anybody wants to hear Caleb Kuh, they've got to stay tuned to CKMS FM. Want to play something else for me?
Yeah, sure. We're going to slow it down a little bit here.
Okay. Thank you.
entered my mind. You had what I lack myself. And now
fade out there. That's nice. A bit of harmonics on the strings. Yeah. So notice you haven't sung yet. Do you sing?
It's a work in progress.
Oh.
I've been known to sing background vocals or two when you pay me a union double rate.
Oh, okay.
I'm joking, but it's a goal for me. I'm just not an amazing singer. I spent most of my years playing guitar, and I kind of forgot about that. And then right. Now it's catching up to me.
This is why you've got Rosie in the studio today.
I tend to, it's my whole living is getting hired for stuff, so I'd like to hire other people.
Yeah. How do you pick your musicians? How did Rosie get to be part of the Caleb Cook Quartet?
Well, I've got a pretty wide network just from, being around town. You meet a lot of people in the scene. You know, mm-hmm. Connections, kind of everything. Like any other industry, the music kind of stuff is just all networking. So it all kind of blossoms together.
Well, same way you get the gigs is the same way you get the musicians.
Exactly. Like I've auditioned for very few things. I always just get called for stuff.
Yeah.
And I think talking to a lot of professional musicians who've toured all over, that's generally the way. You know, some gigs you have to audition for, but generally, if you're the guy, they'll call you. And so when I look for people, I kind of have a vision of the music in my head. And this will happen sometimes because I'm a musical director for a lot of artists. I serve that role sometimes. Which is basically the artist has their music, and then I come in and I help them get their live band together, and I try and connect them to the right people for other musicians, right? So I play guitar, I try and connect them to the right drummer, the right bass player, stuff like that. So for my own band, I was lucky that I had this vision already. So I kind of was trying to find artists and other musicians who would fit within that vision. And so since it's a jazz quartet, there's kind of limits your range a little bit. I know a lot of funk guys and a lot of pop guys, a lot of rock guys and stuff, but jazz is a little bit more nuanced, so to say, especially since it's my first time leading my own band. I'd like it to be a very high-caliber band. Right?
Yeah, of course.
Kind of just pulled my mind. I found all the top jazz guys I knew who were local and would be down for the project.
I didn't think that would be a job, really, finding bands and instrumentation for other performers. I figured that the performers would mostly do that themselves, as you have for yourself.
Mm-hmm. You would think about it. I guess it's not really an independent job, more so as like an additional responsibility. Mm. Right? It's like an additional role that I take on within the kind of ensemble. Because generally, everyone knows different people. That's the thing.
Right. But not quite like a manager.
Absolutely not. No. Generally, most artists manage themselves unless they're part of a big label or something.
Right. And there's a publicity that needs to be done.
Absolutely, yeah.
I see you're scarce on social media. There's Caleb Koo on Instagram, and that's about it, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of that social media was kind of before me, and I was never a big tech guy. Remember when I was a kid, I tried to get into the whole programming and video games and stuff like that, and it never stuck. I never had a passion for it. I always just kind of picked up the old six string again.
And you haven't found any lack, fear of missing out that hasn't happened to you, because obviously you're picking up the good gigs without it.
yeah, I've been able to make a relatively solid living just getting called for stuff. And, you know, my philosophy is you're a good person, you do good work, good things will come to you. Yeah. That's kind of what I stick by.
Yeah. Good for you, and hope it carries on for you. Absolutely. So in the future then, when you do end up producing a record, you know, when that muse has struck, mm-hmm. Will you be hiring out for people like producers and managers and publicists and distributors and all the rest of that?
Yeah, especially nowadays, I see the trend is a lot of people produce everything themselves, right? Yeah. They'll write all the songs, they'll produce it all, they'll mix it, they'll master it themselves, and they'll mm-hmm. promote it all themselves. And, well, I believe that it's incredible, and that's great, and that shows the beauty of this modern age of the internet and everything. I personally believe that I know I'm a moderately decent guitar player. I know I'm good enough to, you know, get by doing this, but I know that I'm not an amazing mixer. I know that I will never be as good of a mixer as someone who's doing, you know, what I'm doing on guitar full time, right? So I always believe in hiring out. I always believe in when I'm going to do something, I try and do it to the best of my ability. So if I'm going to make a record and I have the budget, I want to hire the best people that I can to help me with their expertise. And I believe music is such a collaborative thing. Music is so immensely collaborative, even if you're playing something solo, which sounds kind of silly. But when you're playing something solo, you're collaborating with not only yourself, but with all the other influences and the things that have come to you. Right? When you're playing any note, any single note that you play, there's hundreds, thousands of different influences and years of music and genres and songs and albums and everything that goes into every single note that you play on an instrument. Every single rest that you take on an instrument. And we may, you know, is breaking stuff down to a really finite level here, but it's true. Every single little thing that you do on an instrument was influenced by something else, which is a great thing, right? It shows the collaborative, constructive, generative beauty of music, right?
So there's a lot of history there. There's a
every
lot
single
of
note,
influences.
Every single rest.
Isn't that overwhelming? Don't you find so being so overwhelmed by all this you know, meta music that surrounds the notes, that it stops you from actually being able to play any of them?
You see, the beauty is, though, is it's only overwhelming when you sit down and you break it down. The beauty is, as much as we can sit down and theorize about all this stuff, when you actually get in the moment, that's innate. It's, you don't have to think about it. That's the beauty. It's there, but it's a very implicit process, right? Instead of having to explicitly sit there and think about all, you know, oh, no, you know, James Brown would articulate something like this. His guitar player, you know, like wouldn't articulate it like that. It's just an innate process that happens. So that's the beauty. I can sit down and break it down to a deeper level, but then you get in the moment and it's like, it really doesn't matter. It's just there.
It's just there. It's there whether you want to take advantage of it or not.
For better or worse.
Yeah. That's very deep. I imagine a lot of musicians must have this, you know, surrounding them. Mm-hmm. But I've never heard anybody articulate it quite like that.
Well, it's interesting because I come from, I think, from my experience at least, talking to a lot of people, I was never really hanging out with people my own age. Like I said, I started playing in big bands.
Right.
So I remember starting from the ages of probably, you know, 13, 14, my friends were all 65 plus. They were either my friends from jazz, you know, Jazz FM, who were like super ridiculous level, super focused on jazz, right? And so they didn't fall into the normal high school teenage stereotypes. Or I played in a lot of big bands around Waterloo, in like the KW Big Band Theory and the Royal City Big Band, playing dances at the Legion and, you know, different balls and proms and events like that. So a lot of my friends were either intensely focused at the highest level on this one thing, or they were 65 plus with incredible life wisdom just oozing from them. Right. Yeah, so I found that I come from a very old school tradition of guitar playing, of music making in general. Mm-hmm. A lot of modern musicians are kind of, you know, they started playing because they were inspired by some artists and they play in their bedroom, they write their songs. I come from a long tradition of kind of working musicians who came up and do it for a living kind of thing.
Does that exist just in jazz or is that pervasive in the industry?
It was all over. And if you look in like country and rock and blues, it's the whole sideman thing has been around forever.
Because
your favorite artists, you know, they'll make all the records and then they go on the road and they got to hire someone. And so, you know.
Right.
So it's a long tradition, and I feel like I kind of fell into it much sooner than a lot of people my age.
Yeah. You plan on going out and doing some touring, or is that something that you'd have to do as the headline artist? Is that something that doesn't happen to sidemen?
Oh, no, absolutely. So a lot of times it'll be an artist hires a band for a tour. a lot of times the artist himself is kind of just a sole entity, and then they say, oh no, I've got this big tour coming up, open for the Arkells or something like that, right?
Right.
And then they say, well, I need a band, and they hire a band, and I would be kind of in that group. But I am a student full-time right now, in addition, so I kind of do music full-time, I would say, because I'm teaching almost every single day of the week, and then I'm playing, you know, two to three gigs a week usually. And then I'm also a student full-time.
Right. Close to graduation?
I'm second year.
Second year. Okay.
So I still got a little. And then the plan is after that, medical school or grad school.
Ooh.
So
that's going to interfere with your music playing.
Well, that's kind of why I'm getting it done early. I'm having the best time of my life. I'm making all the money. I'm having all the fun I can now.
And then, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so, and you've got something to fall back on if that medical stuff doesn't pan out.
Well, there you go.
When you're playing the Hooter next Friday, Friday, yes. April 21st, 2023, starting at what, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock?
Doors are at 6:30. I believe our first set's around 8.
Okay. And then playing one set in the night or?
Two sets.
Okay. Yeah. And both of them are sold out?
Yeah. Wow. Well, actually, it's the same.
Okay.
Two sets in the same thing.
Okay,
yeah.
Two sets in the same sitting.
Yeah.
All right. And yeah, sold out. That's just so nice to hear.
It's incredible. I love selling. I've played as a sideman in a bunch of different, maybe three or four different shows at the Jazz Room in the past, and they've all been sold out too.
Yeah.
And it's always just such a great. I love that room. I remember being in middle school, and this, you know, goes off. I moved around a lot when I was a kid. Like I went to probably like four or five different primary schools, kind of around.
All in the area here?
No, not really. I was kind of all over Ontario, and I lived in Mexico, and I lived in Thailand for a little while.
Okay. You've created a lot of life in those 20 years.
Yeah, that's a trend I've been noticing. so I settled here for kind of middle school and high school, though. The very end of last year, grade 8, and then high school, I stayed here. And I remember being in middle school, seeing a video of my future high school jazz band performing at the Jazz Room. And I remember seeing only this on YouTube. It was just an ensemble thing. And I remember seeing, like, that's the coolest thing ever. And I'd only been playing guitar for a little bit back in those days.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to do that. And so that's why I started studying jazz, and I started trying to get into it. So the Jazz Room really was very fundamental in my path as a musician, I would say.
Okay. Is this the pinnacle, then, of your Jazz Room experience, headlining a jazz quartet?
I would say so.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe next year I'll bring an octet.
Octet, perhaps.
I'll just keep multiplying. Next year I'll bring their 12 after that.
Caleb Koo, big band.
I'll get a whole string orchestra behind me.
Yeah. But there's Caleb Koo, the soloist, too.
Yes. Right? So I've done a couple gigs kind of under my own name, but not as a proper kind of, I'd say, like a listening set.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, as a working musician, I play a lot of different environments with a lot of different artists playing a lot of different music. And sometimes I like to break it down into like a listening set and then like kind of a background set. So you have sometimes where a restaurant will hire you just to be a nice ambiance. So I'll just play nice solo stuff in the background.
Okay.
And that's kind of Caleb Koo, the soloist, where I'll play covers of songs and such. And then a listening venue is when people go to a proper venue to listen to bands and such. Yeah.
So when you're in one of the restaurant venues there, do you get the listeners showing up every once in a while too?
Occasionally. I have a couple people who are kind of... they do tend to show up whenever they see my name, which is always...
It
feels great.
Oh, groupies. Excellent.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Fans. Dedicated fans.
Yeah, and it's always amazing because, you know, as much as I kind of accidentally act like a grizzled veteran sometimes, but I've only been doing this maybe like three, four years, right? But I've done a lot of it in the 3-4 years, and so it does still feel amazing, all these things, you know, to have people care about your music. And more so, it's not even the fact that it's not even my music. It's just the way that I interpret the music. So people care about the songs, which also means something to me, and they care about my playing and the way I interpret them.
That's a big part of jazz. When Rosie was in a couple of weeks back, she said that you can't just go out and play anything at these jazz concerts, especially she was worried about the standards.
Oh, very particular. If you play Frank Sinatra over there, you better be Frank Sinatra, because if you're not Frank Sinatra and you're playing Frank Sinatra, they're going to have your head. Like, they are so...
Not necessarily. I mean, I think... Basically, what it comes down to is when you're a young jazz musician, all of us kind of follow a very similar path. We all go into all the jam sessions and all the clubs and everything, and there's a bunch of beginner standards. Think about it like someone learning guitar. They learn, like, maybe Brown Eyed Girl or Smoke on the Water and Wonderwall.
Yeah, okay.
That kind of stuff, right? So, effectively, what playing, like, Fly Me to the Moon or, like, All of Me or a really basic standard without a twist, without some kind of, like, you know, extra complexity there, it's effectively like walking into Massey Hall and being like, here's Wonderwall. So you want to take the language, and you can play standards, absolutely, like Fly Me to the Moon. It's a great tune. It's just one of those things where if you're going to play it, you better make it cool, because we've all played it before. We've all heard it.
And it's got to be played the Caleb Koo way, not the Frank Sinatra way, because people have heard the Frank Sinatra way and would be disappointed if it wasn't played just right.
Yeah, and it's, you know, man, jazz standards have been around for so many years now. They've been recorded by so many artists. Do you think of the amount of people who've made their entire living playing solely jazz standards? Of course, mm-hmm. they compose things, but a lot of the composition of, you know, what jazz people want to hear is you go to a club, you hear a lot of standards. Yeah. Right? So they've been done to death. So if you're going to do them, you know, at least my opinion is you should try and put something new on them, right?
Right, right. Yeah. And do you have your set list? Are you willing to divulge your set list for next Friday? Or?
Well, we've got 18 songs.
Ooh, so okay.
Quite a few.
Okay, won't have you run them all down then.
Yeah.
But a lot of them are not standards. They'll be a little bit more obscure.
Well, my kind of philosophy for it was to put in a few jazz standards. So there's a couple kind of old jazz tunes that I really loved, you know, back from when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. And then I've got a lot of kind of more modern funk and soul, kind of 60s, kind of hip, cool music, and we've kind of jazzified it a little bit.
Okay.
And like you heard, we're going to do a cover of Royals
yeah.
and stuff like that. So I think the whole idea is to take the language of jazz and the harmonic complexity and the ideas of jazz and apply them to other, you know, more contemporary style music that I enjoy and that I think other people would know better. Because I love playing jazz, but if I'm going to be straight ahead honest, I'm not the greatest straight ahead bebop jazz player in the world.
Right.
Because that's not what I get paid to do. That's, no one would ever, you know, you can't make that much of a living playing straight bebop jazz unless you're in the top percentile in the world, which I will never be, and I'd have no desire to. I want to play jazz, but, you know.
Is there some danger of misjudging your audience and bringing forth a set that just doesn't gel?
Yeah, I've seen that happen on quite a few gigs that I've been at and that I've also played on. it'll just be... I don't divulge any names, of course, for privacy sakes, right? But certain gigs where you can tell the booker got the wrong impression of who the artist I was playing for was. So you show up to a gig in Toronto in a club with, you know, three or four different bands on the bill.
Yeah.
And then the first two bands match really well, and we're third up. And we're like, oh, we're nothing like any of these other people.
Something completely
and like,
different.
Maybe it'll be cool. And then it's like, oh, this is not this cool. Is not cool. People like, what is going on here?
Yes. Work your way through the music and...
You just do your best to let your authentic... And like I said before, I think being authentic is the one message I've taken away from the many years of wisdom I've been instilled in by all the older people I've been around.
Yeah. So you're in Toronto sometimes. What's your radius? How far will you travel for a gig?
Oh, man. The farthest I've gone so far has been Montreal.
Oh.
We played...
That's more than an overnight thing.
Oh, yeah. Montreal. It was pretty crazy. I played for this artist called Frankie Flowers, and it's funny, it was actually her second gig ever. She just got really lucky. She had a great Instagram. She had great Spotify statistics. So she got booked to open for her favorite artist of all time, this guy called Kenny Hoopla, who, like, he worked with Travis Barker and stuff. So he's a pretty big artist. So we went to Toronto, or sorry, we went to Montreal at this place called Le Studio Tidi. And it was like a 700-person room or something. And I think they sold out. And it was like a punk rock show. So we were playing like lighter alt-rockish stuff. Mm-hmm. But it was still pretty crazy.
Wow.
And I think there's a video of me out there playing there, and I felt like a proper rock star. I had the sunglasses on, I was doing the big big guitar solo thing, right?
Oh, cool.
So
cool.
That was the farthest I've gone so far, but I've received, you know, I've gotten offered to go on a little kind of small Canada tours and stuff, but just because of school, I can't.
Yeah, that's got to limit your reach to, you know, a large geographic area.
Yeah, you know, try and be responsible.
Yeah. Well... Hopefully once you've graduated and, you know, you'll be able to be a traveling medicine man and musician at the same time.
That's the dream.
Yeah. Oh, holy mackerel. I'm just looking at the time now. We've got 9 minutes left according to the clock. Can you squeeze in another one?
I think we can.
All right.
We can.
Got the time, and if my daddy thinks I'm fine,
Who'd have thought that guitar had so many notes in it? That's wonderful. That's on the bill for next Friday?
It is, yeah. All four of the tunes that we've played so far will, plus a little couple surprises.
Excellent, excellent. Tell me more about next Friday. It's the Caleb Koo Quartet.
Caleb Koo Quartet at the Jazz Room. It's going to be a great show. And look forward, because I'm going to try and use this this experience to book some more Caleb Koo Quartet dates in the future.
Right.
And I also have Instagram, at Caleb Koo, mm-hmm. and I have a website, www.calebkoo.com.
Oh, yes, yes.
You look up my name, you'll find some stuff. You'll find me playing some guitars.
Yes.
I also play with a number of different artists, which I will be adding to my website. I've been so busy with schoolwork and everything.
Yeah.
My website's been kind of dead for a little while, but I'm getting back on it. We're getting back on the grind. Also, if you'd like to learn guitar, the
yes.
information is there. I do teach a lot of guitar, and it's something okay. I really, really am passionate about. I really do enjoy spreading the love of music and love of guitar in general just right. to everybody. There, and then I also, I play for a bunch of different artists. So if you want to catch me, I'm playing almost every single week.
Excellent. Just weekends or weekdays too?
You'd be surprised how many weekday gigs there are.
Got an event schedule. So there's the Hooter at, doors open at 6?
Doors open at 6:30, yep.
Yeah, 6:30 on April 21st.
Yes.
And then after that?
So the night after, I'm actually playing at the Hub in downtown Kitchener with an artist called Christian Economides, and we're opening up for another band there.
Okay.
And then I believe the week after, I'm playing some gigs with Clarissa Diocno.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I'm a accompanist, a guitarist.
Oh, cool. Okay. So I've got to have her in the studio at some point, too.
She is great.
She's about to release an album, isn't she?
She's gearing up for it.
Yeah,
She's got a couple singles out right now, and she's just the most fun person to be around.
Yeah.
I love performing with her because she's just such a fun time. And we play quite a few city events, so kind of, campfire events and, things for city.
Okay. Got to have her playing the radio station.
Yeah. And then, actually, I forgot, tomorrow I'm writing an exam in the morning at 9 o'clock, which will not be fun. I love the 9 o'clock Saturday exams. But after that, I'm also playing at the Churchill Arms in Waterloo.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
With an artist called Nick Boardman. And I'll be playing some good old country tunes there.
Country tunes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a country artist, so I'll be playing there.
All right. I've gone there for blues.
Yes. Yeah, they do a lot of really great stuff there. But we're playing some good old kind of raunchy southern rock country music.
Uh-huh. How about you, Rosie? What have you got coming up?
Oh, well, besides the Jazz Room on April 21st, I've got exams, which is going to be super fun to look forward to. I'm hoping to release some more new original music this summer. I don't have a set date, but I do have a new song that I'm really excited about, so that's in the works. I have to get back to the studio to finish up the final master for that one. And hopefully more gigs with Caleb in the summer. I mean, to be honest, it's pretty loose structured. I'm really excited for this summer and the upcoming year, but so far, like, just short term, we've got, again, a gig on Friday and a new song coming out in the summer.
Okay. Sure you send the song our way, because stick it on the radio.
I'll send it to you guys before I send it to anyone else.
Ooh, cool.
Exclusive here.
Yeah, I got to sign a contract for that.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Well, that getting some radio exposure will help for your career as well. I mean, that's the point of community radio, after all.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Got a minute left. You want to... play me something, and then I'll interrupt you halfway through. I can just keep on playing.
Nice outro.
Yes. We listen to CKMS Community Connections on CKMS FM Radio Waterloo. In the studio today, we've had Caleb Koo on guitar, Rosie Samra, accompanist, accompanying on vocals. Thank you both so much for coming in, spending an hour, and playing lots of really cool music. I enjoyed it a lot. CKMS Community Connections is produced by Radio Waterloo. It's sponsored by Radio Waterloo. The executive producer is Jennifer Strong. Associate producer is Jeff Stager. My name is Bob Jonkman. CKMS Community Connections airs every Monday at 11 o'clock and alternate Fridays at 3 p.m. I'll be back next week. See you then.